Welcome to ACC Nation. On board, Will Ogenin, and I'm Jim Quist. What are we waiting for? The first college football playoff committee rankings. Yes, this is the week. Five regular rankings and one selection day and playoff semifinal team announcement to look forward to. The carnage continues in college football. Here's a list of the ranked teams falling to unranked teams. Number 6, Texas. Boom, gone. Number 15, Washington. Whoop, they're gone. Number 16, Texas A&M. See ya. Number 19, Oregon. Down the tubes. Number 20, Wisconsin. Oh, banana peel. Number 21, USF. Out the door. Number 22, NC State. What happened? We'll talk about that. Number 25, Appalachian State. Hope you enjoyed it. First and only time you'll ever see the top 25. All right, the mad scramble to figure out who goes where in the puzzle hit voters in the AP Top 25 and USA Today coaches poll like a ton of bricks this weekend. Will and I look at the ACC men's teams in the AP Men's Basketball Top 25, Operation Basketball Voting, and Women's Basketball Top 5. First, some football. Let's just jump right into this mayhem, which just doesn't seem to stop, Will. I thought, well, okay, 2 weeks ago, there was, some crazy. Then last week, there was some crazy. And now this is the third week of crazy. This is kind of out of the norm. I don't know what's going on here. We'll start with this Georgia Tech rolling into Blacksburg and laying a whooping on Bud Foster's D.
I think the best way for me to compare this game is, if you're watching a wrestling match and you see like the heel wrestler win by submission, and then after the opponent is tapped out, he'll keep the submission hold going just to get the extra heat on him. That was Georgia Tech, Virginia Tech, yeah. In a nutshell.
That's a good way of looking at that.
What do you look at? 78 yeah. Rushing attempts by Georgia Tech. That's what I mean. They had 79 plays in total, 78 runs. And why throw when you're sustaining that kind of success on the ground?
Exactly.
Now, let me add this caveat. We're talking about, this is probably the worst Virginia Tech team in quite some time, whatever. Let's slow that down and realize that four of the top five tacklers on this team are freshmen and sophomores. This is still a really young defense. And if you're going to get them, this might be the year to do it, because they're only going to get a little more experienced and better. And I still think the future is bright with this Hokies team. It just may not be this year.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that next year, this is the team to keep a very close eye on. They will be very, very seasoned by then. I think this is going to be a rough ending to this year. And I had said it last week, if you're a Hokies fan, you might as well start thinking, I'm giving up the Commonwealth Cup this year. It does not look good for you.
I'm not ready to go there just yet.
I am so ready to go there, because I see a team that's slipping and one that just seems to be putting it all together. So anyway, again, as we pointed out last week, it's probably better to wait until the week to make that proclamation.
Yeah, we still have a month or so to figure that out. So.
And Lord knows things change quickly. Mm-hmm. All right, Boston College over Miami. What is going on with Miami that, we don't already know about? Is there something that is not obvious that we're missing? Maybe that... Mark Richt, I've heard some of the worst stuff from people that I would have had some level of respect for in regard to Mark Richt and his coaching ability.
Yeah, the Miami fan base really took that loss well. When I decided to look up Friday night after the game and see all these people wanting to fire Mark Richt, coming off winning the ACC Coastal and going to the ACC title game last year, they're still 5-3. It's not like their season is over yet. I mean, they still have a shot at the Coastal. The problem is Mark Richt has no idea what he's doing with the quarterback situation.
And the thing is, he's a quarterback, so you would think that it would be very clear to him. So let's give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe that experience does mean something extra past the fan base, and it should be respected from that standpoint that he actually has a clue what's going on, and maybe he's got two guys who just aren't doing the job.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, he did come out this week and say that, or last week even during the bye week, I think he said that while Malik Rozier would start, he was going to set up, you know, situations for Nakosi Perry to play, but he never played in this game. Mm-hmm. So I guess you could say, and he kind of lied to the media and to his fans about that. But I'll tell you what, you know, the big thing for this game was A.J. Dillon looking like A.J. Dillon and being the bell cow back that he needs to be for this team. You know, after missing a few games, he came in and carried the ball 32 times for 149 yards and looked like the A.J. Dillon we knew to come and love, unless you're, you know, a fan of the opponent. But he's got another good matchup next week, Virginia Tech, coming off the 78 rushing attempts that they faced last week. I don't know if you're familiar with the whole body blow theory. This is brought up by Bruce Feldman, who his theory is that when you face teams that run the ball a lot, like Georgia Tech did, that your defense is going to struggle the following week.
Mm-hmm.
Get A.J. Dillon next week. Ooh. So we could be looking at a double body blow theory for Virginia Tech, you know, for going into next week's game.
Yeah, well, I want to give you a credit here, because last week you pointed out if A.J. Dillon is in the game, that's what cinches it. That's mm-hmm. that is what puts the ribbon on it. And you were right, man. You laid that out, and hey, look what happened. A pretty good performance for Boston College.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what they needed.
Yeah, I think we can agree there. And that was a really big win for them from mm-hmm. the standpoint of, you know, getting the team fired up and making the coaches exactly. feel better. So
and throwing in the factor too that it was the red bandana game, and you mm-hmm. know they're already in an emotional high for that game, and it just all the factors, you know, laid it out there for a Boston College win. And well, like I said, went exactly how I expected.
Yeah. All right. We won't spend too much time on this one. Clemson over FSU, and this was down in Tallahassee. So,
The highlight of the game, I think, was when they showed the guy reading a book with a shirt off in the stands, which was just far more entertaining than the game being played on the field.
You don't see that very often at an FSU game, that's for sure.
Yeah, no, and I think it's pretty interesting that it came out post-game that Willie Taggart talking about players quitting, and he's vowing to make some changes. Man. So I'm going to be interested to follow up on that and see what happens coming into the next game. And I really wonder if he's going to put James Blackman in as starter, even though he was basically facing the third stringers. He looked pretty good yesterday in doing that. Mm-hmm. And I think the Clemson's third string defensive line would still be one of the better ones in the league, it looked like.
Yeah, in a lot of ways, that is that's a starting lineup for some teams. Wake Forest over Louisville. Again, just an ugly performance. And really, I can't give credit to either side here.
Well, I'll give credit to Mac Holburn, who, anybody saw the story, but he originally had committed to Louisville, mm-hmm. and a couple weeks before signing day, Bobby Petrino pulled a scholarship and wanted to grayshirt him, and so Colburn decided, no, I'm not interested in doing that. I'm going to look elsewhere. Ended up walking on at Wake Forest. 20 carries, 243 yards. 3 touchdowns and 1 giant middle finger to Bobby Petrino.
And Petrino's been getting a lot of those lately.
yeah, not just from opposing fan bases, but his own.
His own, yeah. Gee whiz. Let's move on from these two games. Clemson looked really good. Wake Forest, that performance you just noted, that was good. But otherwise, those games were ugh. Mm-hmm. All right, dumpster fire. Let's talk about North Carolina. This is one of these long-time traditional rivalries. And it's so funny. I'm not 100% sure that people in the general public view the North Carolina-Virginia rivalry as a quote-unquote hardcore rivalry. I think, you know, a lot of people looked at the Maryland-Virginia, especially in basketball, games as rivalry, as a hardcore rivalry, because I don't think anybody at Virginia really had any love lost for Maryland in basketball. But this was an interesting
Maryland
game.
In general, but...
Well, this is true. Let's look at this North Carolina and Virginia game.
Well, yeah, you mentioned it. I don't think these is each other's chief rival. I mean, Virginia's chief rival is Virginia Tech. North Carolina's chief rival is probably NC State, but it's still the second oldest rivalry in the country behind Minnesota-Wisconsin. As far as the game goes, you know, I was impressed. You know, UNC, they have a secretly decent offense. They have... You know, a good quarterback, Nathan Elliott, feels like he's finally established himself. The running game, they really couldn't get a whole lot going just because Virginia's defense was pretty good. They obviously have weapons side. You know, Daz Newsome, Anthony Ratliff-Williams, Bo Corrales all had pretty, are pretty good players. But once again, we talked about Virginia's defense has been really good after the bye. This is, I believe, the fourth straight game they've held an opponent to under 400 total yards. And, they didn't do it as much with turnovers this week. They did get one fumble recovery, but, they still clamped down when needed to. And, another strong defensive performance, another good game for Bryce Perkins. He had three touchdown passes, ran for one, had over 100 yards rushing. Jordan Ellis ended up playing in this game, had a solid day. Olamide Zaccheaus, one of the, he had 10 catches and ended up becoming the all-time leader in Virginia history for career receptions, passing Billy McMullen. And he's had an outstanding career. It's kind of gone under the radar because I feel like he's not the most talented player on the roster, but he's been one that has throughout his career just been a steady, player, a little undersized, but you get him the ball and things happen. There were a couple plays yesterday where he took a reverse and ran it for 29 yards and it looked really, he has that deceptive speed and he can get away from anybody. And Virginia is now bowl eligible in back-to-back years for the first time since they went to four bowls in a row from 2002 to 2005.
I want to say this. I've been very impressed with the progression and the growth of Virginia. But this moment, since you have already pointed that out, I want to say something about Larry Fedora and UNC, and not a bad thing. They have had nothing but adversity the last couple of years. And amazingly, Fedora and his players have scramble to put something together. They have some momentum. They're not clicking the same way that a team that has been playing together all season long should be, and that's because of the suspensions. But imagine where they might be if they didn't have those suspensions, because they're showing some things there that is encouraging. And we talked about this last week about players coming back next season. And if they do, North Carolina is a team to keep an eye on. So, a little tip of the hat there to Larry Fedora and the Tar Heels, because I think they deserve that. Let's go to our next game, Pitt over Duke. Pitt is Pitt. You don't want to play Pitt somewhere from midseason on, because they know how to pull a rabbit out of the hat.
And if you look at Pitt's point, this is Pitt's point totals against Duke since joining the ACC. 58, 48, 31, 56, 24, and 54. Whatever the reason, Pitt just knows how to score points upon points upon points against Duke. It's kind of a head-scratching thing because it's not like Kenny Pickett was just okay, but it's just the consistent effort to run the football. They ran the ball 52 times against Duke yesterday and averaged now over 9 yards a carry. And Duke is had a good defense, and they just had no answer for what Pitt was trying to do. Meanwhile, Pitt's defense had no answer for anything Duke tried to do. And Daniel Jones threw for 396 yards and 4 touchdowns. They ran the ball for 223 yards, averaging over 6 yards per carry. these games have had a tendency to be shootouts over the years, and we should have probably taken that a little more into consideration when looking at this game. But Duke has now dropped to 1-3 in conference after starting the season off 4-0. But, you know, you mentioned Pitt. They're quietly 3-1 in the league, and this game coming up Friday night against Virginia and Charlottesville could be a rather interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's interesting because, you know, obviously first place is on the line, but what, you know, we talked about Virginia's, you know, ability to stop, you know, players the last few weeks after their bye week, and what can Virginia do against this lack of Pitt's defense?
Put some points up on the board, apparently.
That'll be for sure.
That's, you know, we've talked about defense dominating the ACC over a couple of seasons. Now it's, you know, it seems like the offense, because it doesn't seem like anybody has any defense other than Clemson at this point. Speaking of a shootout, let's look at this Syracuse and NC State game. Carrier Dome, crazy place. Want to score points? Go to Syracuse.
Yeah, crazy game indeed. When you look at there was a combined 953 yards passing in this game. Ryan Finley threw for 473 in a losing effort. Eric Dungy threw for 411. Lots and lots of passing yards in this game because neither team could really get anything done on the ground. NC State was without Person, who's been, you know, one of their key cogs in the backfield the last few weeks. He's been really helping that ground game, and without him, it seemed like they just couldn't get much done. Granted, when you run 73 plays and you only ran the ball 29 times, but they still, you know, neither team averaged, you know, more than 2.3 yards per carry. But when you do that, you got to try to do things through the air, and both teams had plenty of success. And got to give a shout out to Kelvin Harmon because he had 11 catches for 247 yards in that loss. And, you know, they had a lot of big plays, but when it came down to it, the NC State defense just couldn't stop anything Syracuse was trying to do. I mean, Sean Riley and Nakeem Johnson both had over 100 yards receiving. It was quite a different week when you look at what happened previously when Dungy got benched for Tommy DeVito, and you thought maybe there was a change of quarterback coming, but Dungy came in and played well, and he set more school records, and, you know, he's starting to wipe Donovan McNabb's name off the record books.
It would have been interesting to see DeVito in the game with his arm, because he's got a gun too, just to have seen how effective he would have been as well. That's the thing about playing in a dome environment, where it's perfect for throwing passes. And I mean, you just get a couple extra yards on everything you throw.
You can't get into a track meet with Syracuse because they're going to out track meet you, basically.
Oh yeah. They got
that's
the speed.
What NC State tried to do there.
Yeah. Bad move. They took advantage of the secondary. Next week, it's Pitt at Virginia, a game that Will mentioned. That should be a real battle. Louisville at Clemson, FSU at NC State. Somebody's looking for payback, and I would imagine that's the Wolfpack. Georgia Tech at UNC, Syracuse at Wake Forest, Boston College at Virginia Tech, and that is a game that, it used to be Blacksburg was home advantage. Not anymore. So we'll see how that all works out. And as you pointed out with Dylan in the backfield, after that pounding by the Yellow Jackets, it may be even uglier. So let's move on to AP men's basketball. The top 25 is out. How did ACC teams fare? Well, this way. Duke at number 4, Virginia 5, UNC 8, Virginia Tech 15, Syracuse 16, FSU 17, Clemson 22. That sound about right to you? At least,
if I was doing a rankings, I'd probably move Virginia up to 3 and leave Duke at 4. I feel like the addition of Braxton Key, now that he's eligible, is going to do a lot of wonders for this Virginia lineup this year. I really like them. Yet UNC being in the top 10 is fair. I think they deserve to be there. I'd probably swap Virginia Tech and Syracuse just because I'm a little higher in Syracuse this year than I am Virginia Tech. I still like the Hokies, don't get me wrong. I think they're going to be a tournament team this year. Florida State 17. I think this is interesting. You know, they just lost a player for potentially six weeks, which will be a huge because that'll be he's going to miss a lot of good non-conference games. I'm still on the fence about Clemson. I'm not sure how good they're going to be this year. I could see them doing as well, but I could also see them taking a step back too. I have questions about how good that team is going to be this year.
I'm kind of with you with the Syracuse Virginia Tech flip flop. I could go either way there. And Virginia, yeah, I could see Virginia being higher. I just think there's a load of talent in the ACC men's basketball wise this year that is crazy. Crazy good. The top five media predicted finish at ACC Operation Basketball was Duke, Virginia, UNC, Syracuse, Virginia Tech. So somebody's thinking along the same lines here as you are. They're seeing that probably Syracuse defense, they're probably putting more stock in that. I can't see how they're wrong with that. And I don't see where you're off base with that at all. Syracuse's defense is very, very effective. It is pretty close to being as effective as Virginia's. And mm-hmm. they certainly have some offensive weaponry that can take the ball at you pretty quickly. So that's probably the difference that I see between Virginia and Syracuse is that I don't see Syracuse as effective on defense as Virginia. I do see them with a little bit more offensive weaponry from the standpoint of making that mad dash to make something happen, to be able to come back from being down. Virginia is more of this very steady pace and just chewing away at you and breaking you down. And I feel like that's also the case on offense, though I will say this year, I think you're going to see a lot more points up on the board from Virginia.
When you look at what they have, you know, in terms of offensive weaponry this year, you have your starters of, you know, Salt's not much of an offensive weapon. He's there to set screens and play defense. But the Diakite, who I think could have a boom year, you know, you get Kyle Guy, Ty Jerome back. You got DeAndre Hunter, who's a projected lottery pick. You, like I said, you have Braxton Key now eligible, so you have plenty of options with the lineups. Plus, you have Jay Huff. If he can figure out the pack line defense, you have a 7-footer who can shoot it from anywhere, you know, on the court. He can definitely hit some threes. So you can stretch the floor quite a bit with Virginia, depending on, you know, how you want to set the lineup. Tony Bennett certainly has a million chess pieces he can play with this offense.
Should be fun to watch this season. There is another grouping here that I'll take a very quick look at. This is the next in Operation Basketball, the next top 10. They have Clemson, FSU, NC State, Notre Dame, and Miami. And that rounds out the top 10. So the top 15, or the entire 15, includes Louisville, Boston College, Georgia Tech, Wake Forest, and they're putting Pitt down at the bottom. I'm not buying that. I think that's a horrible mistake on the part of the media in that they're thinking too much within their own bubbles.
I think it's going to be very close between them and Georgia Tech for the bottom of the league this year. I definitely see some improvements. Obviously, Jeff Capel's getting some quality commits in. They have a couple of key players back. Georgia Tech is just a complete mess. And Josh Pastner's, you know, had a horrible time recruiting down there. They do have a couple solid players. I mean, you know, they lose Josh Okogie and Ben Lammers. You know, they still have, you know, some decent talent, but I just feel like this is going to be a rough year for Georgia Tech. And it's going to be a bad. I wouldn't count Wake Forest out either. They've lost some key pieces too. But it's going to be an interesting year. I think the bottom of the league as a whole isn't going to be as good this year as it was, or it's going to be a little bit better than last year. I mean, there's going to be no team going 0-18 in the league this year.
Here's a question mark for me, and I think that Louisville and BC being down that low, I think that's also a mistake. I don't know about Wake Forest. I keep waiting for Danny Manning to do something. and it's not happening. So yeah. I've lost my faith. Sorry, Coach.
I think Louisville, this could be a little bit of a down year. They lost too much, and this is kind of a transition year. I think they're going to be very good next year. They are already recruiting quite well.
Yeah. Mac's doing a great job, I'll tell you.
Yeah. He's already got that program going. Like I say, this could be a little rough this year. I mean, I still think they're going to be a decent team, but I mean, I don't think they're going to go to the NCAA tournament, but you know, get back to me next year. He's already got some really quality commits coming in for next year.
All right. How about Christian up at Boston College?
It's going to be interesting. I know they have some players coming back. You know, Kai Bowman's coming back, but the key question there is, what is this team like without Jerome Robinson? I mean, was Bowman that good of a player because he had a person like Robinson, you know, with him, or does he take a step back this year, not having, you know, a Batman type player? Mm-hmm. I do like Stephon Mitchell, who's a local kid here from the Twin Cities, but I think his shot needs to work a little bit better on offense, but he's a great rebounder. And I think this team's going to be pretty good. I think they're going to be a bubble team this year.
So in that mid-pack, that top 10, there's one team that I have a very big question mark about. In fact, I thought they ought to be in the 15 in the bottom five, and that's Notre Dame. I'm not seeing anything there that tells me that they're truly worthy of being in the middle of the pack.
Two words, Mike Bray.
Well, yeah, but he's not out playing basketball. So,
but I'm a firm believer. Duke, he could take, you know, a group of people off the street and make them competitive. But like, I think they might be a bubble team this year too. I mean, you lose Bonzi Colson, and they just weren't the same team, you know, without him last year, and they do lose a couple other players. But yeah, I get it. I think they might be a little bit better than – they're going to be better than Louisville, and I think they're going to be right with Boston College this year, right in that area as a bubble team. But, yeah, I believe in Mike Bray. I'll just say that.
Well, yeah, he's one of those coaches that you just have an immediate level of confidence in, that he can make something happen. As you said, taking lemons and turning it into lemonade. So, and that's what I think he has. I think he has kind of a lemony team. So, mm-hmm. Bray's the sugar, I guess. Sugar daddy. All right. I'm not going to go any further with that thought. Let's look at women's basketball here. The top five predicted finish. Now, there is a little bit of a disagreement here. They have a blue ribbon panel and a coaches panel that select. And the top five, Notre Dame, which I think we can all pretty much say, sure. Louisville, again, that's kind of a sure. Syracuse, I don't think you get too much disagreement. NC State, so good. So far, so good. The disagreement comes at five. The panel takes Duke. The coaches say Miami. And basically, they just flip-flop them. I'm not sure that I can see where there's some question there at number five. But everything else, what do you think? That top four look pretty good?
Yeah, it does. I mean, Notre Dame, I think just about every player on their roster is up for some sort of award here in the preseason. So that doesn't surprise me. Louisville, they're going to be another strong team. And you look at how close the voting was actually in terms of the points, but it was actually a lot closer than I expected. It wasn't by much. I know that it was, but they're, you know, it's going to be a tight race in the league. I still think Notre Dame's the team to beat, maybe even nationally. You know, Syracuse, you know, we remember they went to the title game a few years ago, had a couple rebuilding years, but I think they're back. They're going to be another strong team again this year. You know, NC State, you know, another great team this year. They've been steady for a number of years. Duke, you know, you can go ahead and rub it in again, Jim, because that's the running joke for the past couple of years. But yeah, I think I would agree and take Duke over Miami, but you know, you're really splitting hairs there.
Yeah, and believe me, I don't really have a preferred team there. I think that both of Duke and Miami would fit right in there for me. I see Duke probably more like next year, because there's some recruits that are coming in that that tell me that that's going to be a team to watch. Don't ask me why I am so high on Duke women's basketball. I really don't have any idea. And as I've said hundreds of times on this podcast, I do not have a dog in the hunt when it comes to teams in the ACC. And I think Will can vouch for me on that.
Mm-hmm.
I like watching all sports, and I like seeing teams do well. If you don't do well, I'm more than glad to take you to task. If you're doing well, as I said with Larry Fedora, tip of the hat to you, man. Doing a good job. Even though things, you know, people will say, what are you, crazy? No, I think that you need to recognize
you are.
It.
Well, that's true. That's too. That's another story for another day.
That's true, and we'll have stories to go with it. We'll verify it, as a matter of fact. But in this case, you know, when I see a really good team or something that's coming together or fitting in the recruits, and that's why I'm keeping an eye on Notre Dame next year, because we have a recruit out of basically my back door here.
We followed her track quite a bit lately, right? Because she's being a local kid, but yeah, because you know, Virginia had a shot with her, but ultimately she's got to go with the team that has a lot of good recent history. Mm-hmm. That's not UConn.
Yeah, and I've watched her from the standpoint of not only her play but physicality. And I swear, I think she's taller, and I know definitely she's put on muscle. So I'm really looking forward to what she has to contribute to the Irish when she gets on the court for them. So, and I'm talking about Brunell, if anybody wants to know.
Yeah, Samantha Brunell, that's what her name was.
Yeah, very, very nice young woman and a heck of a basketball player. So that'll be fun. That's a look at some of the basketball and, of course, football. And, man, some interesting stuff. Hey, coming up next week, Brian Koppel is going to begin joining us on a regular basis to talk about basketball. And he is also going to be sharing some insights from a referee seminar that he's recently attended. New rules in the book? Yeah, well, we'll find out. We'll see how it applies and how it could impact the game, because, you know, it's like rules committees. They're never satisfied with sitting there and looking at each other and gaveling and saying, we don't need to change anything. They like to change something at least every year. And you know what that means. When it's put into the hands of referees, that means that's what they're going to be calling a lot of, at least at the beginning of the season, because it stands out in their heads. Okay, so we'll find out what that might be this year. And Brian will talk about some of his experiences with basketball out in the great Midwest and his strange desire to see a conference out there do well. We'll let him explain that. Check out the guys on Twitter. Will is at Will's World MN, Xavion at XAYVEON, and I'm at ACC The Q. Come join us. Make ACCNation.net your homepage for the latest in sports out of the Atlantic Coast Conference. Check us out on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and YouTube at ACC Nation, and on Facebook. You'll find us at ACC Nation Sports. Until next time.